Tom.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, our Challenge Athletes Foundation. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Our next guest, Juan Carlos Vinolo. Juan Carlos, how are you?
Fine. How you doing?
I am doing wonderfully. So last August, we're talking, was that the 16th of August?
The 14th.
14th of August. And right. you've been riding, you've been a cyclist for how long?
Pretty much all my life, but I pretty much started with the 10-speed bikes back then.
Yeah.
When I was 14 years old.
So were you a bike racer going way back?
Pretty much, yes.
And was cycling starting at the age of 14, was that your main sport?
Yeah, pretty good. Cycling, yeah, that was my main sport, but I pretty much played all team sports as well. I enjoyed everything. Football being one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, and so out of high school, the cycling was pretty consistent. You always rode the bike.
Pretty much, yeah. That was the one that I was doing all the time. The other sports just came and went, depending on
right
on my friends and what we're doing at the time. But cycling pretty much prevailed throughout my life.
And when did you hook up with the San Diego Bicycle Club?
That must have been about 2 to 3 years ago. That just from riding around and in San Diego and riding into them, or pretty much when I went to Fiesta Island and they were doing their laps.
Right.
Just pretty much joined in and did a couple of their Saturday rides as well from UC Cyclery. And,
right.
So it's just, I pretty much rode with my group of friends. But much of the time we were running with them because of the pace line that they have going on Fiesta Island on the weekdays.
Well, and what's cool about Fiesta Island for the most part is, and I know that particular day, August 14th, rather than ride along the coast where, there's a lot of traffic, you got lights, you got all sorts of problems. Usually when you ride a Fiesta Island, the nice thing, it's a one-way road, and it's, most of the time, pretty safe to ride.
That's right. That's the reason I was there. That's the reason I went rode there most of the time. That particular day, I wanted to go to Chula Vista and ride the Silver Strand with a couple of friends of mine, but I was a little late coming out of work.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of traffic going south, and I decided to go to Fiesta Island. Of course, I'd rather ride the coast. I like it. It's nicer.
You're right.
It's a better view and all that. But the good thing about Fiesta Island is that, like you said, the traffic. I mean, on weekdays, afternoons especially, if you're riding the coast, a lot of people are trying to avoid the freeways, and they take the coastal road to move along a little faster. So it's a lot more traffic. People are tired. They're fed up with work. And, so it's not the most the safest place to be. And Fiesta Island, it's nice. It's super safe. There's no traffic practically. It's mostly cyclists. And so one-way road. And the good thing about it, too, is that you have the pace line. You have a group of riders, and it's a different type of training. You
right.
kind of push yourself a little bit more when you're riding with a peloton, with a group of riders.
And how big a group did you guys have that day?
I would say it was between 20 to 30 people.
Wow. And I ride out there a lot, and there's a little split in the island, so that it's basically about a 4.1 mile loop around the island, the full loop. But then you guys ride, sort of the one of the split loops, so it's like a little over around 2 miles. So you're coming around that there's a corner there, which is pretty blind, right? I mean, you really can't see, can't see much, but you shouldn't have to see much since it's a one way road. And when did you see the car heading the other way?
Well, yeah, like you said, it's a blind corner, not only because it's very tight, but especially because there's a lot of bushes on that corner.
Yes, a lot of vegetation there, yeah.
There's a lot of vegetation there. It's been like that for many months or years. And so you couldn't see. And that together with the fact that you're probably looking more into the merging lane that's on your right.
Yes.
you're paying attention to the merging lane, but at the same time, you're paying attention to the left as well because you have the runners. Sometimes you have runners that run the wrong way.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, good point.
So you're trying to look out for the runners as well, especially on the corner. So, yeah, I was looking up and looking towards the corner, and you're trying to stick to my front wheel.
Right.
And that particular corner, you also have the wind hitting you from the side. So you have to be very close to the person in front of you to avoid getting spit out of the peloton. And also, because I was about to take my turn to the front.
Right.
I was in second or third position from the guys at the front. We're rotating. And all of a sudden, I mean, I was going through the turn, concentrating on the tire of the guy in front of me, stay close, and it was instantaneous. There was like car, and next thing you know, it was like I'm on top of a car.
Wow.
And just didn't realize what was going on, kind of looked around, and I don't think I ever lost consciousness that I know of. So I pretty much looked around, saw that I was wearing my cycling clothes, and I was on top of a green car, and I pretty much knew what happened.
So when things like that happen, the natural tendency is to sort of assess, right? Okay, can I move my arms? Can I move my legs? What are my injuries? What is that what went through your mind?
Yes, and pretty much the first thing I noticed is that my knees were right next to my head on my left side.
Yeah.
In a very awkward position because my left shoulder was like going into the roof of the car. And I was suspecting my legs to be on my right, but they were actually on my left. And I could tell they were my knees because I wear straps for my meniscus.
Right.
So I knew that my knees were like bent over right next to my head, which is like really awkward. And immediately I realized I couldn't feel my legs. And it's different to any other reason that when you're hurt, I mean, you feel the numbness or you feel the pain.
Sure.
Or even when they're numb, you feel the numbness. This was like completely different. I never felt before in my life. And it's like I couldn't feel anything.
It's like they were separated from your body.
Yeah, it was like or my leg, exactly. I don't feel anything at all. So immediately I started, you know, worrying about it and saying that I couldn't feel my legs and things like that, yeah.
So, and the woman was heading the wrong way. We were pretty sure she alcohol and drugs, and who knows why someone drives the wrong way on an obvious one-way road. But obviously you had bigger things to worry about than the person who was driving the car at that point. What happened in terms of, you know, your friends and the medical getting there? How did the group handle what had just happened?
Well, at the time, your time, your awareness of time is not very precise.
Right.
So I couldn't tell how long I was on top of that roof, but later on, I found out that there was another guy actually holding me up. Mike Barreras was holding me up all the time because I had people underneath me that actually went into the car through the windshield.
Oh, so that's right. So it was more than just you that were impaled by the car.
Yes, it was about the car had practically hit like 10 people.
Wow.
Out of which we were practically, I don't know if it was four or five of us that were still embedded on the car. Like mosquitoes, you know.
Yeah.
And so I understand that Mike was holding him up for about 20 minutes until the emergency response people were there. I heard the policemen were there almost immediately. And then it took the rest to come pretty quickly as well, about 20 minutes, give and take, 15, 20 minutes.
I heard that you had the presence of mind to shove somebody else out of the way when you saw the car.
Yes, that's Brandon. Yeah. Brandon, it was what he was saying. Brandon Ewers.
Yeah.
I don't really recall that.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Because it was so fast. But he did say that I apparently pushed him out of the way when the second car was coming up.
Wow.
But I mean, it was so fast that I really don't remember that part.
So you end up obviously in the hospital and you have two punctured lungs, several broken ribs, broken left clavicle, dislocated left shoulder, loss of one kidney, laceration of spleen, 6 broken vertebrae, and obviously, you know, paralyzed from the waist down. What how long was it when you got to the hospital where the doctors sat, you came in and explained how serious these injuries were?
Well, I guess all the time since the moment of the impact, I knew it was serious.
Yeah.
You know. So at that moment, I knew. I mean, I kept saying on the way when they were transporting me to the ambulance, I kept saying over and over that I didn't want to be paralyzed, you know?
Right.
I kind of, like, knew. I mean, because it's something so weird that you never felt.
Right.
A lack of feeling something. So all the time I was thinking about that. So I was hoping it was, like, temporary.
Sure.
And I don't exactly recall when they actually told me that that was the case. You know, I guess I was dosed up a little bit once I got there. I was under heavy medication. And it's not like there was an instance that I remember that someone told me that, but it was like something like it was more like a confirmation of what I kind of already realized.
And when things like that happen, finding, you know, people who understand and who can help and, you know, can give you sort of a process of, okay, this is what's going to happen next. Did the hospital provide that? Who came in to sort of walk you through the process of, okay, this is what happens next? Because you're still dealing with you're at that point in the hospital for a long time, and you're dealing with life-threatening injuries.
Right, yeah. I was at the intensive care at the ICU for about a month.
Wow.
So throughout that time, I mean, they're just pretty much trying to save your life. Pretty much all my organs shut down except for my brain and my heart. So, but everything else wasn't working. My liver wasn't working. My one kidney that was left, the other kidney got disconnected upon the impact, so I lost that one. The one kidney that was left shut down for about 2 to 3 weeks, and I actually had to go under dialysis. And I think there was like a week there that they actually thought I wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so. And then I went into the, once I was a little bit more stable, I went into the operating room to get my, you know, some titanium rods to fuse my spine. And after that, it's like you've been in the hospital for a long time, and you go into rehab. So you change hospital. You go into a special rehab unit in that was Sharp Memorial.
Yeah.
And once in rehab, my wife somehow contacted someone from CAF.
Yeah.
And it was Carolyn.
Carolyn Odom. Yeah.
Carolyn Odom, yes, and Odie as well. And I think I was in the hospital already in rehab. I was, 2 or 3 weeks after? She contacted them right away, but you're not very mobile at the time. You're in your room most of the time. But then they start taking you out of your bed into the regular rehab exercises and into the rehab room. And one of those days, Carolyn and Jeff visited me to the hospital. So you start talking to people that have been living with as a paraplegic or quadriplegic in his case, and they start teaching you and you start learning things, of course, and you talk about what life is going to be like.
So obviously you've been athletic. You were a cyclist before this. And did you, being at Fiesta Island, I'm sure you saw guys on hand cycles before. Did you know much about hand cycles, and when was the first time you got in one?
The first time I got into a hand cycle, it was a borrowed one. And that must have been, let me think about this. I was out of rehab.
Yeah.
The whole thing altogether, rehab and whole hospital thing was about 3 months.
Yeah.
over 100 days. And I was back home, and it's probably was like 2 or 3 months after that someone loaned me. Also, Fred Liebel.
Yes.
Was also introduced to me while I was at the hospital. I mean, I met several people. And Fred has a friend that has a lot of hand cycle business, I believe.
Yes.
So they loaned me one to go for a ride. So they took me with them, and, I mean, a whole bunch of people were there. And they helped me get into the hand cycle, which is the hardest
part. That's the hardest part, isn't it? It's a transferring out of a regular chair into a hand cycle.
That's
a pretty severe drop.
In. Exactly. Getting in is easier than coming out.
Oh, getting out is, because you got to go from down to up. That's harder.
That's exactly right. And so going back up is a lot harder. So they loaned me one of those, and it had a motor. So it was nice. At the beginning, they didn't tell me that, so I was struggling a little bit. So it's extremely hard. It's a lot harder than riding with your legs.
Right.
And because of my shoulder injury, it's a little bit more permanent as well. I mean, it should go away. Should go away in about, another 6 months. It should be fine, the shoulder. But it's been almost a year, and it's still troubling me right now. So it hurts me a little bit to pedal with my hands. But it was a great experience because you can feel the air in your face and
yes.
A lot of similar things that you experience in regular cycling.
So, and you have your own hand cycle now, right?
Yes, I do. Yes, I got a grant from the Challenge Athlete Foundation. And I have my own. I got it about a month and a half ago or so. And I've ridden it like three times. And yesterday I actually rode it.
Nice.
Yes. About two and a half miles. Something like that.
Hey, that's how you start, right?
Not a lot, but it feels like a lot. That's for sure.
And it's funny because a lot of times people are like, well, gosh, it's the hand cycling itself is probably the easier part than the, getting to the location, transferring, getting back from the, hand cycle back into the chair. The logistics of that stuff a lot of times is a deterrent to getting out there.
Yes, that's one of the hardest parts. And because of that, a group of friends of mine from the SDVC got together, and they got me a lift, which is actually a chair.
Yeah.
That goes up and down.
Oh, that's perfect.
And, it's not designed for this, but it works fine. I mean, it was a great idea. And they all got together and chipped to get me that, which is very nice. And I used it yesterday for the first time, and I still need a little help. People, holding
sure.
the chair, and it's still some, trying to move my legs around. It's not that easy. Fred was there, and he helped me as well, move my legs around, and a lot of people have contributed to this. But I mean, of course, the hand cycle. It was CAF, the one who got it for me. Super nice. And it's an awesome looking, bicycle or tricycle. And yesterday was like the second or third time I got on it, but it was actually the longest I've been able to ride on it. It's almost 3 miles.
Nice.
And like you said, it's the hard part of getting in and out.
It is.
And it takes a lot of time. The logistics of putting in the car and taking
yes.
the wheels apart. So you do need help and Pat Murray, another close friend that I made during at the hospital, she was actually riding the same Peloton, but for some reason that day she was a little tired, so she fell behind, and she was actually not in the group at the time of the impact. But a lot of the people I actually met while at the hospital, I knew them from riding, but I never really knew them outside of riding in the Peloton. So a lot of them actually visited me at the hospital and became really good friends.
So you've developed some good friendships from, you've made lemonade out of a tough situation.
That's right, yeah.
So you're a husband, and you've got two small children. How is, obviously,
right.
your life changes. How has the family dealt with this?
Well, at first, my kids, the first month I was at the intensive care, they were taken by my in-laws. And for that month, and so when they came back, I was in rehab already.
Yeah.
So, and they were told, I was so worried about them, you know, seeing me in a wheelchair.
Sure.
And what they were going to think and all that, you know. And it was very nice when they saw me. They actually didn't care about the wheelchair, you know. They were happy to see their dad.
Of course.
And they noticed other things more than the wheelchair itself, you know. They actually thought the wheelchair was kind of cool. And they could ride around, and they would hop on, and it was a power chair at the time. So they would like to get on and go for rides and things like that. But for some reason in their mind, even up to this date, they think I'm just going to get up one of these days. You know, they're like, oh, this thing's temporary.
Right.
So their state of mind is like, they're not worried because they're like, this is not a permanent thing.
Right. You know? Yeah, it's just dad's got an injury and he'll get better.
Yeah, and even though we've kind of try to explain it's going to be like this probably forever, you know, and they just don't, I don't know if it's because they're kids or something, but they're like, they've chosen not to believe that, you know, so.
Right. Well, you know, like, they've got their dad back, right? And if
exactly.
You're in the wheelchair or not in the wheelchair, you're still dad.
Right, and they helped me out a lot. I mean, my little girl is 7 years old.
Yeah.
Daniela, and the boy is 5. Well, at the time, they were actually 6 and 4, but
yeah.
It's almost been a year. But it's amazing how much they helped me, you know. And they helped me get into the car and attach the wheelchair with the straps.
Yeah.
And my little girl actually pushed me up a long ramp one of these days. We went to the train, take a ride in the train just for fun. And there's this long ramp at the Oceanside Station.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I know that ramp.
Pushed me all the way up. It was quite amazing.
Wow. Yeah. So I know there's been a court case as well during all this. How hard is that sort of reliving the worst part of your life? I mean, it's like to a certain point, like your kids are like, let's move forward. Yeah, all right, dad's here. Wheelchair, no wheelchair. He's still dad. Let's move on. Having to deal with the court case, how tough has that been for you?
Well, it's, you know, it's not like I've... I pretty much think of this every day, so isn't it like reliving something that you haven't thought about in a long time?
That's
so
true.
Like, isn't that as hard as it sounds?
Yeah.
And, I mean, going to court is it's just part of the process. I believe the lady who was driving the car, I believe that she's very repentful about it.
Yeah.
She's extremely sorry every time she sees me. It's always like, you know, saying she's so sorry about what happened. And I think it was a very unfortunate accident because then again, if you think about it, maybe to a lot of us, the road it seems like an obvious one-way road. But then if you think twice and you start thinking about and you look at the place a little bit more and you're probably not very familiar with it and you've probably been at the beach for, I don't know, a couple hours or half an hour or whatever, going back into the road is not necessarily the most obvious thing to that you're going one way or the other. So
good point.
You know, you actually it's not that hard to actually make the mistake of going the wrong way.
Yeah, it's not like there's big arrows everywhere.
And exactly, and now there are a lot more indications. Of
right.
The city did a good thing, and after the accident, they started putting a lot more indications up there, and they cut down the brush and the bushes.
Right.
And so those are gone, and I mean that helps a lot. But I think there should be a lot more done there to make it safer.
I agree. Really, you should have that. There should be a white line down the middle of that road with an arrow pointing, you know, and saying, you know, one way, everywhere.
Right. And I mean, like I said, they've actually put a couple more signs up, and all that, and. I don't know. Probably a good thing would be actually probably just closing it all together to motor
cars.
Traffic.
Yeah, why not?
You know, and I mean, still allow people to go in and out, but it's not like you said. It's only like a 2 mile loop, and
yeah.
If you want to take your dog in, you could walk a little bit. You know,
right? Yes,
and make it a lot safer for all the people who are going to be doing the water activities and all that. You don't have to launch. Actually, all the launching facilities there are outside the island, so it's not like you need to go in there to put your jet ski in the water or anything like that. So
that's a really good point. Really good point. So, what is the what from a cycling perspective, or hand cycling perspective, do you have a goal? If you decided, hey, you know what, within 6 months I want to do this.
Yeah, well, I was. It's not that I necessarily have a goal, but I definitely want to get better at it. Like I said yesterday, I was barely able to do 3 miles, and going uphill right now for me is almost impossible.
Yeah. You know?
So I mean, I just hope I could keep improving. I'm a little bit restricted because of the shoulder.
Sure.
And yes, actually, one of my goals is that in a week and a half from now, I'm gonna lead out a road bike ride.
Cool.
And I was hoping that by then I was gonna be a lot stronger and riding for a while, but I haven't been able to do that yet. So.
Well, it'll come. It'll
exactly.
come. The best thing is you've got a great community around you between SDBC and with CAF and the people you've met through this. People aren't going to let you not ride the bike.
Exactly. No, I mean the whole cycling community has been extremely supportive. The paraplegic community also, and San Diego in general, and of course there's a lot of support from CAF.
Yeah.
Also from the YMCA.
Yep.
And this ride I was telling you about, it's going to happen in a week and a half from now. I think it's July 14th. It's called the Salsa Ride.
Oh.
And I think is it? I believe it is the Salsa Ride. It's in benefit of, I think, Children's Hospital in Tijuana.
Yeah.
So I've had the honor to be able to.
You're going to be the lead cyclist.
Them out. Yeah, just lead them out on the at the start line, and I was hoping like I could probably like do most of the ride by now, but of course I'm not going to be able to do so. But
next year,
the good thing about the nice thing about it is that another of the people that were invited is a very famous cyclist, the most accomplished Mexican cyclist of history.
Wow,
Raúl Alcalá.
Ah.
So
yes.
When I was young, he was one of my heroes, so it'll be nice to meet him.
That is cool. Well, Juan Carlos, it's great to have you in our world over at CAF. As you were at our grant distribution the other night, and it's like every day there's new people who need help and support, and, down the line, you're going to be the guy helping the next person who's going through this.
I certainly hope so. And every time we get together with CIF, you meet a lot of new and interesting people. And it's great because everybody wants to help out. And
yes.
They're authentically interested in hanging out or just being friends.
Love it. Juan Carlos, again, great to have you in our world. And I'm glad that, because it was nip and tuck a year ago when you had that injury, if you were going to live. And the fact that your
That's
children
right.
still have a dad and your wife still has a husband and you have the capability to the world's out there. You can end up doing that $1 million challenge bike ride in next year sometime, right? You can do whatever you want.
I certainly hope so. And CAF is such great support to do that because, this bike is not only going to help me be happier or fitter. It's also going to help me rehabilitate myself. I can, even though my shoulder's hurting a little bit from yesterday's ride, I can feel that my muscles are starting to get a little more movement, and it helps you to the rehab and all that.
Right.
And I would also like to especially thank you, Bob, for all your support. And
wow.
I mean, you're a great guy, and you really give a lot of hope. And you give so much to the community that I don't have any real words to thank you enough.
Well, very nice of you, Juan Carlos. The main thing is the community always surrounds and always helps people in need. And that's what it's all about. We all know when we ride a bike with, 1-inch tires with 120 pounds of pressure, that stuff can happen.
Right.
And having CAF and other groups there to have our back is really essential. So that, because you and I both know that sport is it's a huge part of our life, right? It makes you feel good, makes you better at everything you do. So
of course,
a life without sport would be awful.
Yeah, I was telling someone that cycling for me wasn't just, you know, exercise and being fit. It was my psychologist, you know. It was my passion.
It's your therapy. Absolutely.
Huge part of my life.
Well, and it still will be.
Exactly. Thanks to you guys.
Juan Carlos Vanolo has been our guest. Juan Carlos, thank you again very much for taking time.
It's my pleasure.
Again, we are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, the Challenged Athletes Foundation. You can check us out at ChallengedAthletes.org and Babbittville Radio. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes and on Babbittville.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.